You are now online with Andrea, with your host, Andrea Garrison.
Good afternoon. Welcome. You are now online with Andrea, and I am your host, Andrea Garrison. I'd like to encourage all of our listeners to practice the universal law of giving by doing whatever you can to reach out to help others. Our topic today is the wonderful book, Niyabu, Madam, Why Are You Here? And our guest is author Akoswa Dardane and Edwards. And actually, this is a welcome back because you've been here before, or we've been here before.
Yes. Isn't that correct? And it's great to be back.
Yes, like we were old friends, just chit-chatting away. You know, the time just got away with us, and. And you wrote another book.
I did. This is my second book.
I know. And we were talking earlier about how you didn't know that you were going to write the one. Now you have two.
Yes.
And possibly three.
Well, you gave me good advice. You told me it goes in threes. So I always take good advice.
So tell us about your journey. From Trinidad and to the UK, because you have quite a story. So if you can just tell us a little bit about that, and then go into how you ended up working with women in Uganda and other parts of Eastern Africa. I mean, it's an amazing story. I can't wait.
Well, you know, as we said before, we were talking before, that I had no plans at all to write any books about my journey, because in my head, I was a high achiever, and my plan was to have a safe, high-powered job behind a desk, crunching numbers. And so I studied to become an accountant. And I really wanted to have the whole white picket fence life, and two and a half cars and a dog and husband and children. And I was following that. I was on that road. That was my journey. But I always felt that something was missing. And I always felt that some of the things that I was doing was sometimes dishonoring, or sometimes really not my purpose. And so I suppressed that, and I went along and did become the accountant. I moved to the UK. I got married at quite a young age because it was on the plan that I had for my life. And then after studying and acquiring the high-powered job and the husband and the whole life, I decided to move back to Trinidad and Tobago because that was part of the plan as well. And everything started falling apart. And I lost the job. I was actually fired from the job. And at the same time, my husband at the time decided to leave. He said, you know, it's time for me to go. So I was left with just me, and I thought that I had to have all these things to be enough and to be worthy. So I was really in a dark space, and I thought that, what else can I do to be enough? And what saved me was really volunteering with women and working with them. I actually went back to London, and I was working with women who came from East Africa and Bangladesh, etc., those areas. and they came to the UK as what they call refugees. I don't like that word, but that's what they called them. And that really saved my life because I was giving back and I felt alive. I felt I was doing something worthy. And from that, I met a lot of women who, you know, had stories that I didn't even fathom, you know, coming from conflict areas, coming from places where peace that I took for granted was not the norm. And I thought, oh my God, I just lost a few things that I can always get back. You know, I could get back another husband, I could get back money, I can get back a house. And that really started me on a different journey. And what was happening at the time was that they were forming an organization in Canada, which looked at using entrepreneurship as an empowerment vehicle for women in post-conflict countries. And they asked me to come. And going there, they brought in some amazing women who were doing awesome stuff, really lighting up the place from different parts of the world that was coming out of conflict, realizing that women were the ones who rebuild the place because either the men were dead or gone or just not interested. And I met a woman in Ottawa who was from Uganda, northern Uganda, who she had this vision, this big vision to become, for her and her village, which was 900 other women, to become the best agricultural seed company in East Africa. Now, as I say that, it sounds normal to us, but in certain parts of Uganda, being a woman business owner is unheard of. And she brought in all these 900 women, and she wanted to make her company the best. And I said to her, you know, I would like to come out there, because in my mind, I was still sort of hedging myself or placing my value on the things that I lost. And I thought going out there would be a way to get away, to run away, to lay low for a bit. And not even thinking about anything else but escaping. And she said, you know, you will experience something that you've never experienced before. And I said, sure, you just don't know what I've been through. And I actually went. She said to come out and spend 2 weeks and see if I would like it and stay. And that turned into 2 years. So in that 2 years, it completely changed my mindset. I learned so much from those women about living in service and self-love and giving back and honoring the people who went before you and paving a path for those coming behind you. And what is ironic about it is I thought that I was going there to help build this fabulous company and show them. And it turned out that they really showed me.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? I was thinking how you talk about in your book very well, and you just basically said it so beautifully. You're talking about how you were running away from your problems. And,
yes.
But you were running away into doing service is what you were doing. You chose, you could have run away in other ways, but you chose to do service to others. So what is it about service that is so healing? And then interesting how you went there thinking, well, I'm going to help. But you received a lot of help yourself. I mean, spiritually, emotionally. And yeah. It was just beautiful. And I think that's the beautiful thing about your book and your story, actually, is that you really learn the importance of service from reading your story. You know, there's something about giving, and the abundance is so great, isn't it, when you give. If you could just continue and just talk about that, the service, and the healing that you received, I kind of felt like you went through this amazing transformation.
I did.
You know what I mean? It was like, wow, yeah. Is she blossoming? And, yeah. And did they tell you a thing or two?
They schooled me. They schooled me. Oh my God. I was in the naughty corner. I was really in some naughty corners. Trust me. And, the whole thing about service is what I learned is what you give, you receive. It's the same thing. Giving and receiving is the same thing. And it may not come to you in the same way you give it, but it would come to you in many, many different ways. And we are really our sister's keeper. That is what I learned out there, because there were times when some of these women had to leave where they were from, I mean, kilometers. It would take you a day to get into town, and they would leave their family knowing fully well that their children are loved and well taken care of, because they believe in the whole village concept. The village raises the child. And what I realized is, if you want to heal yourself, give. Be of service, because somebody went before you and did something to allow you to be where you are. It's not just automatic. A lot of these women know that they may not ever see the fruits of what they're doing, but they are convinced that those behind them will benefit, and that is enough to motivate them. So I did not have that total mindset when I got there, and I was always told, you know, the country that you came from, there was never any war in that country. There was never any conflict. And you have a responsibility to the people who allowed you to live that way. It is not just about you taking from the country and complaining that there's not enough of anything, not enough proper roads. You have a responsibility to ensure that the country remains one of peace and love and that sort of thing. And I never thought about it like that. I always thought that success means, you know, having the degree and I'm not saying anything is wrong with that. I just learned a way where I can use what I have in service of my ancestors and, you know, the generation behind me. And I think the reason why I ran into service was because I had a little inkling before, when I was volunteering with the woman back in the UK, and I saw the transformation of communities by just supporting one woman. you would see an entire family changed. And just to see that made me think, oh my God, this is how you change a nation in that small way. So those women in East Africa taught me a lesson. You know, they really pointed out to me how selfish I was and how important it is to give back, because I just did not happen to get a free education, a free university education. That was built on somebody else's effort. So yeah, and what kind of struck me too is, in terms of material things, sometimes they didn't have what we in the West have, and it was always, you know, we would make it do. We would use what we have.
But now, when you were around these wonderful, wise women, did they ever indicate lack to you at all? Or did they seem like they had abundance?
Well, overall, yes. They taught me about using what you have to get what you want, because in certain villages all they had was land. They had an abundance of land and they had their labor, and they would say, you know, Madam Akoswa, we have land. And in my business school thinking, I'm saying, but we have no money. We have no money. How are we going to grow a business and we have no money? And they would laugh at me, or they would say, you know, Madam Akoswa, you people. And we would make do. Things would happen where there would be somebody with a little bit of money. They would come together and use it, and we started small. So there was some women, of course, we had to convince, because some was thinking like me, like, we don't have money, you know, what do we have? But overall, there was always the philosophy that you use what you have. And I don't know if you ever saw any statistics about the innovations on the continent. They're the most innovative people. They start businesses at a higher rate than any other continent.
Why is that, would you say?
I think it's a combination of necessity and the philosophy of use what you have to get what you want. And you build as you grow. You grow and you build, you grow and you build. And that is something that it wasn't at the forefront of my mind. As far as I'm concerned, we go for a loan or we get some financing. And we did have to do that eventually. But as I said, to start a business as a woman in certain parts was very tough. And a lot of banks were approached even after building up what we had, and the answer was no, categorically.
Well, certainly, even in Western culture, wouldn't you say that people say, oh, no money, there's no way you'll ever be able to do it.
Mm-hmm. But exactly.
But somehow there, they were able to work around not having the money and to push forward.
Yeah, and it wasn't easy. It was tough. And one of the things that I learned from that, on that journey, was persistence. Because, you know, getting rejected from financial institutions and whoever else is tough. And I could tell you, after maybe about five times, I was like, hey, come on. are we going to continue getting no? And the response was, we're not done. We're not done. When we get a yes, we're done. So
they were not easily discouraged.
No, I mean, after living in 27 years of civil war, this is nothing.
Yeah.
This is nothing. So I learned about the determination and persistence. You do it until it is done, and you find a way to get it done. And I think it's one of the best lessons that I've learned. When you get tired, you rest. You rest, and then you return and you start again.
And you know, it's funny. It seems like simple wisdom, right? You know, when you get tired, you rest.
Yes.
We just keep, you know, in the Western world, we just keep going.
Yeah. And then we wonder, oh, why are we sick? Or why are we not getting what we want? Because when you're tired, you make decisions that are not in the best interest because you're not fully alert. You're not really there 100%. So I know when you're tired, rest, we go and we cook some food, we dance a little bit, we rest, and then we come back fresh.
Now, did you ever feel that the women were competitive with the other women, or did they seem to work together more than women in the Western world?
I think they work together more. I mean, 901 women doing a business, coming together to do a business. There will be differences of opinion, but I think the vision was, let us make our village, our town, better than it was before for ourselves and for our children. So whatever fights there was, that it remained that this is the goal, this is the vision, this is what we're working towards. And I think another thing that I learned there is, you know, you leave your ego at the door. You're just, you know, at the gate or at the, you don't bring your ego into it. I think what I saw out there though was there's tribes. So there's like 56 tribes.
Right.
So if there's another tribe coming in, one or two, then that causes a little bit of friction because, you know, it's different philosophies and different cultures and different mindsets. So that is where I saw a little contention. But if it's all from the same, then it was fine. It was everybody's moving towards that one vision.
Yeah. It sounds like if they had a positive conflict resolution there, they were able to work through it without too much drama, which is beautiful, you know, to think that so many people could work together and there's so much harmony.
Yeah, drama is optional. Drama is really optional. I mean, there were fights, there were disagreements, it's humans. But that whole philosophy of this is the vision that we're moving towards, I've never seen it executed so well ever.
Yeah.
Because the vision is better lifestyle, best company. This is where we're going.
Yeah. Yeah, that's beautiful. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe some of the adventures you had. And there was one when you decided that you were going to drive by yourself.
Yes.
In Uganda.
Yes.
You didn't really know where you were going. And if you could tell us about that adventure and what happened. And I said, boy, is she fearless. Of course, she, as you said earlier, before we went live, you didn't feel that way at the time. But I felt when I was reading it, I mean, I felt like I was like, how could she do that? And I was like, oh, no. I'm like at the edge of my seat. I mean, that was definitely a scene in a movie. But tell us about that. I mean, here you are, a woman in Uganda. You don't know where you're going, and you decide that you're just going to take off all by yourself.
It's funny how you call it adventure, because it didn't feel like an adventure when it was happening.
How did it feel when it was happening? But when you look back.
I was scared. I was like, oh, my God, I am scared. I need to pray. But, you know, I usually would not drive myself in the evenings. They would usually have someone with me and they would drive me. But I really wanted to hang out. You know what I mean? I'm there. I want to see the place. I want to hang out. So
You're at home or something.
I've been there over a year now. You know, everybody knows me, etc., etc. But I said to David, who usually would take me places, I said, David, you know, I think I'm good. I can drive. And he said, are you sure, madam? Are you sure? Yeah, I'm one of you guys. And he said, okay, well, if you think you're sure. And I said, just give me the directions and I'll be okay. So I'm driving and it's not looking like anything he told me. So as I turn the car around, the police comes out in the road, and it's the ones you see on TV with the boots. And the gun and the hat.
Oh, goodness.
And so when I saw him, I said, yes, he will give me directions. I was happy to see him. And he said, you know, pull aside. You are driving dangerously. Now, I know they call me Driving Miss Daisy. So I know I'm not driving dangerously. There's no one else on the road. It's just me and this police. So I said, oh, officer, thank you. I'm lost. And he said, you know, get out the car and you're going to jail.
Oh, goodness.
So I am now saying, did he not understand what I just said? I said, I'm lost. So I said it again. Officer, I am lost. He said, I don't care. Get out of the car. You are going to jail. So obviously I'm like, I'm going to jail for what exactly? And this pissed him off, because I was answering him back.
Yeah, here's a woman talking back to authority. Exactly. The nerve, huh?
Exactly. So he told me to get out of the car right away. So I get out of the car and he said, you will be going into this truck and we will be taking you to jail. And I think it was a Friday night. So he said, and the court is on Monday morning.
Oh, great.
So I said, I'm going to spend the weekend in jail. He said, yes. So just as he's saying that, another truckload of policemen is coming down the street. So I mean, in hindsight, I know I should not have done it, but I ran towards the car. I ran towards the car with the man behind me with a big gun who could shoot me at any time. And I said to the other officers, you know, officers, I'm lost and your colleague here wants to take me to jail. So they speak in their own language. And the senior officer said to me, yes, yes, you are breaking the law, so you will be going to jail. So I'm now confused. I said, okay, what can I do to get out of this situation?
And what I'm confused about is, and how are you breaking the law?
You know? Exactly. How am I breaking the law?
Right.
So he said, well, you can pay us. So I said, great, I have 65,000 shillings, which is a lot of money there.
Right.
And they said, no, 300,000.
What?
I said, I don't have that. They said, okay, well, Jill. So I said, there must be something that I can do to get out of this situation. Oh my God, wrong choice of words.
Oh goodness.
So he says, okay, get into your car. And so I get into my car, take the money out to give him. He gets into the passenger seat and takes his seat all the way back like he's lying down.
Uh-oh.
His hand is around me. And so I'm like, what is going on? And he said, well, you asked what I could do to come out of the situation. So you will just drive. So I'm now pleading with him to take the money. He said, no, he's only... there's no negotiation. It's 300,000 or nothing. So I'm driving now thinking, oh my God, what should I do? And I look in the rearview mirror and the van is following me as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking, should I crash the car? Should I, what should I do? Where's my phone? I realize he took my phone, my cell phone. He took it. Mm-hmm. And so I'm now thinking, I swear I'm peeing my pants now, right? Because I'm like, where are we going? He said, just drive, just drive. So I'm driving and I'm praying. I'm literally praying, God, what should I do? What should I do? Should I crash the car? Should I? And he is talking to me and touching my leg and I'm praying. And then literally like a voice said to me, ask him if you can drive somewhere and get him the money.
Ah.
I asked him and he said, okay, stop. So I stopped the car and he calls the van of guys behind him and they speak in their own language. And they said, yes, you can get the money to us. Now, I don't know where I'm getting this money, right?
Right.
That just came to my head because I don't know where I am. I can't call anyone. And then I'm thinking, okay, well, now that I gave this option, what's going to happen? But I had my ATM card from London. And I don't even know how it was in the car, but I had it in the car because I didn't use it. And I was like, God, you answer prayers all the time. So we drove and we drove. We found this ATM machine. And I think I didn't have all the money, but I had very close to the amount. And I gave it to them. And they left me alone right there. And I said, oh, my God.
Oh. Harrowing. About and how long was that? It must have felt like an eternity, really.
Oh, it felt really long, but I think it was maybe like 45 minutes, an hour.
Wow. But yeah. What a harrowing hour. And when I was reading that, I was like, oh, no. I was like, no, you didn't. As soon as you said you were going to go by yourself, I was like, oh, no. What is she doing? I mean, my heart, I had like this lump in my throat as I read on. But
yeah. But it what worked out well.
Yeah, I'm glad it did. But so, yes, that was like an adventure. Not necessarily one that you want to seek.
No, definitely not.
So, but you were calm under a tremendous amount of pressure. And there wasn't just one police officer. You had pretty much a whole carload or a truckload.
Yeah, it was nine of them.
Yeah.
It was nine of them. And, I was praying to be calm because, you know, anything could have happened. Nobody knew where I was. I didn't have my phone.
You didn't even know where you were.
Exactly.
So they left you there. And then, so how did you find your way back?
No, they gave me directions. When they left me, they said, this is where you go. And safe journey.
Yeah, after you paid him all this money.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was really crazy. But I think in hindsight, it was time to leave.
Yeah.
It's time to leave.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I loved about your book is I liked the different chapters. And as I told you, I love the titles. So I was wondering if we could just go through your book and if you could just share your reflections. I mean, I felt like there was so much, there is so much wisdom in your book. You gained so much insights, you know, from the entire experience. So if you could just reflect, I'll read off the chapter title, and then if you can reflect, you know, whatever it is that comes to you on your experience there. I think this is going to be an interesting exercise.
Yes.
Because you're so wonderful. So, so the first one is show up as yourself.
Yes, and that is, I think that is one of the best lessons I learned out there, because the woman would say to me, Madam Akoswa, how many U's do you have? And I would be confused. And I said, what do you mean U's? And they said, you know, you show up as one person for work. You show up as one person out of work. There's only one you. So you need to show up as you for everything, because you confuse us when you have a different you, or when you show up differently for different things. And so the best thing I learned about is show up as myself every single time and be my authentic self.
But you know what? I find that interesting, because don't you find, though, there are different parts of you, and depending on the situation, you may act a certain way, but isn't that you? Aren't you being you in that particular situation? I mean, when you were in that situation with the police, I mean, that was, you were being yourself. You were thinking on your feet. You were like, how can I get out of this? You were praying. You were you were being yourself at that time.
Yeah.
So if you could just explain more.
Yeah, because I think before I learned that lesson, maybe if I, in the same situation, I would be very much believing that I had to win against these policemen, because in a situation where you are being taken advantage of, you would want to win. You would want to, which is what I was taught. So when I showed up as myself, I was calm, because I'm a calm person. And I showed up with the belief that something positive will come out of it. So what they were trying to tell me is, do not wear masks to please other people.
Ah.
You know, do not show up in places and dishonor yourself because you want to keep a friend or keep a man or to get something.
Right.
You be yourself, and if it happens, it's because it's supposed to happen, because you haven't devalued, dishonored, or disrespected yourself to get something or to show someone or to make people fancy you. And that was the biggest lesson from.
And then people are truly accepting you for you, correct?
For me, yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there's something that Ian LaVanzant says, when you don't show people who you are, they end up loving somebody else. And when you get comfortable and the real you comes out, you wondering why the person is like, who are you? Yeah, and they leave because you didn't show yourself as authentic from day one. And that, I don't know, I didn't tell these women my story for a very long time. But I guess they're very wise, so they pick up on my vibes. But they were able to pick up that, you know, I try to please people. I try to be a people pleaser. And their lesson was, stop it. You be you. And who is in your corner will remain. And who is not, bless them and move on.
Right. Yeah, that's beautiful. Now, the next one, we won't do them all, but a number of them, because I think they're so great. Who am I becoming?
Yes. I mean, after a while, I realized that I was becoming somebody who I liked.
Wow.
It's so funny, but, you know, I was now willing, I was listening, I was participating. I was not just thinking about getting and acquiring and proving and pleasing. I was now very comfortable in my skin. I was more comfortable if somebody, you know, didn't agree with me or didn't see my opinion. I could now be comfortable with that. And it was new. So I had to ask myself, who am I becoming? And if it's something that I like, and I really did, I really was happy to show up as myself.
Yeah.
So that was a genesis behind that.
Yeah, it was beautiful. It's just such a beautiful transformation. I mean, certainly you were beautiful before and strong and wise and smart. But it was just wonderful to see that whole transformation. It was just a beautiful thing for you to embrace the wisdom of these other women, you know, to take it in and allow yourself to be open to it, to grow and to develop. It was just beautiful. Now, the next one is getting comfortable with being uncomfortable. Now that's interesting.
Yeah. And what that was is there were many situations where was totally out of my comfort zone, and I've learned that in order to grow, there's some discomfort, and I had to be comfortable with the fact that there would be discomfort on my journey, and find a way to be at peace with the fact that there would be discomfort. And, you know, I think one of them told me, as you birth something, there's pain, and after the pain, there's just love. So I had to reconcile in my mind that for me to grow, I must feel some sort of discomfort and be okay with that. Yeah. I mean, I'd like it, but know that it's happening and be okay with it.
Yeah, beautiful. And getting over wanting it to be over? I mean, how often are we in situations like that?
Oh, yes. You know, why is this just not end right now?
Exactly. Why do I have to go through that?
Yeah, exactly.
I've had enough.
Exactly. Enough. And this too shall pass. This too shall pass, and it's a journey, and it is because you have to go through some sort of healing or transformation or a lesson. And when I try to rush through things, it's either I miss the lesson because I don't want to feel this way. I want to go straight to happy.
Right.
I want to go straight to comfort. And there are stages. So be where you are and know it too shall pass. It's not forever. The rain cannot fall forever.
Right.
So be in the moment. Be all there. And, you know, it's something that I consciously practice now. I consciously practice. If I am here, I am here. It's kind of difficult now with, you know, all the technology and the phones. But I consciously practice it because I remember one day I was talking to some of the women, and one of them said, you're always looking for, or you always seem to be looking for the next thing. You know, you are here now. This is it. There's no next thing. And some of them learned that because sometimes every day is a survival. You know, at the end of the day, when they make it through, they're happy because living through a 27-year situation like that, every day is a victory. So that is what getting over wanting it to be over is, knowing that it will pass. But while it's there, make sure that you get the lesson or the healing or what you have to get from it. Because if you don't, it's going to come back.
Yeah, I love that. Every day is a victory.
Yeah, every day is a victory. Every day.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So how does free look on you?
That was a very, very deep conversation that I had with this lady. I would sometimes on the way home, she lived close to where I was, and she would ask me if we could take her home as well. Now, sometimes these conversations happening and I'm speaking English and they're speaking in their own tongue. So, you know, she asked me about my country, where I was from, and I was telling her about it, and she asked me if we ever had a war. And I said, no, we never had a war. And she said, you know, you never lived in a war, like never, ever, ever. And I said, no, I never lived in a war. And I asked her, how does it feel to be free now? And she looked at me with this, she gave me this look, and she said, but I was always free. You know, how does free look on you? And I was like, okay, you know. She asked me if I lived in a war. She lived in a war, but she was always free. Mm. You know, she said she was born free, and so was I. And she owns her mind, her thoughts and her imagination. And she wanted to know who owned mine.
Yeah. Wow, it's beautiful. Yeah, I just enjoyed listening to the wisdom. It's just beautiful. I felt like, you know, when I was reading it, I felt like they were talking to me too.
Really? That's nice.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
And that was what I was trying to convey when I wrote it.
Yeah. Right. So step into the light.
Right. Step into the light. So I was they always teased me that I couldn't cook. So they would they would say, you know, how do you show love? How do you take care of your family? And so we were having this conversation about me and my cooking or lack of cooking skills. And I said something like, I can't remember what I said, but it was something that sort of devalued me by their estimation. And they said to me, you know, you don't realize that you're here to shine and you shine. So that's why I called it Step Into the Light. And that was not the only person who told me that, that group of women. I was doing a facilitation session with some women. And so after the session, a couple of them came and they said, you know, thank you, madam, for this. And I said, you know, it's nothing. It's just nothing. And they said, we thanked you and it's nothing. You know, you need to know that you have a light in you. And that's why I put that chapter in there, Step
that's
Into
beautiful.
The Light.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I love it. Yeah. Act like you know.
Yeah, I took that one from the West.
Act that is, like you know.
I took that. I think I heard Maya Angelou say that, or was it Oprah? One of them, act like you know. Because a lot of times, what I would do is just not take the responsibility of acting like I know things. I knew things, so. You know, I would either stay quiet or just because of the whole people pleasing thing.
Right.
You know, and I've learned, you know, as a woman, and as a woman who believes that she's on purpose, that I have a responsibility to act on what I know.
Yeah.
And act like I know. So, that was the genesis of that.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah, I love it. And then the universe wastes nothing.
Oh, man. That's my favorite chapter. Yeah, I think I really had an aha moment when I went with a woman farmer to a place on the border of Kenya, and she was growing this special type of maize, hybrid maize. And I spent some time there, and we were talking about the whole issue of FGM. I don't know if you heard of it.
No.
Female genital mutilation.
Oh, right. Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they practice that a lot out there in that village. So we were talking about it, and you know, I was trying to understand why they do it. And so she was explaining to me that it is their initiation into womanhood. And so she asked me, you know, what do you do in your town to become a woman? And I couldn't answer. You know, like, maybe what, buy a house, get married. So, you know, I learned not to judge things. And when you know better, you do better, that whole concept. So in spending the time there and in having that conversation, I realized that every single thing that we go through is useful, but we don't see it that way. We don't connect the dots, but every situation, every single one, good or not so good, the universe uses for something of value. And what happens is that we judge it and we we place a judgment on it and say if it's bad or it's good, and we, on top of that, we put shame, and especially if it's a bad situation, we put shame and guilt. But it's useful. Everything, every job loss, every divorce, every bankruptcy, everything is useful. And, you know, the farmer, she said, you know, Madam Makoswa, even manure has a use. And you know what manure is.
Yes.
So that is what I know for sure, that the universe wastes nothing. And it allows me now to put things in perspective. Because I may not understand what's going on. I may not accept it at the time. But I know now there's some use. I did not know at the time when I was going through all the things that I, these situations and on the journey, that I would use it to write a book, you know, or use it to speak to young ladies about, you know, my version of what failure is and the lessons from it. But I know that now. So I'm really happy. I was really happy to be there to hear that type of wisdom, that the universe really uses everything, every single thing.
Yeah, that's beautiful. You know, such a beautiful reminder that nothing is wasted. You know, there's value in everything, every experience. Beautiful. And letting go means making room for more.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, in my case, I was like holding on to this guy, my husband at the time. I was like doing anything to hold on, and even though it was not good for me, it was not good. But I was convinced that if I hold on, I would win. I would prove to everyone that, you know, I'm a success. But when I was forced to let go, really. But in doing that, so much more came into my life, and I realized that the universe never leaves a void. It never does. And we sometimes just hold on because we're scared. We're used to the familiar, and we're not comfortable with being uncomfortable. So it is a fact. It is a fact. When you let go of what is no longer relevant or necessary or useful for your growth, it leaves room for so much more to come in.
I just love listening to you. The last time I was just enjoying, you know, the conversation. It was just so beautiful. And this one is just as beautiful. And so I'm worth it.
Oh, yeah. What more can I see?
Yes.
Yeah. It took about 12 chapters, but yeah. It took a while when I got there.
Yeah,
and I'm with it. And you know, it was really like an affirmation for me to recognize that I'm with it. I am enough. I am on this journey, not perfect, but who is? And perfection is not a requirement for living a good life. You know, willingness and openness trumps that. So I use it as an affirmation when I get into doubt that I'm with it. I'm with it. And I really ought to take the time to behave that way. And I wanted to convey that to everyone who read the book, that they are with it just because they're alive, you know. Our worth is established only by God.
Yeah. I really did enjoy it. And I have to let you know that I have your book right in front of me. You should see all the pages I have turned down. I don't like writing in books. But I was like, after a while, it was like, just read the book again. You have so many pages turned down to go back to.
That makes me so happy.
Yeah. So I really did enjoy reading it. It's just, really touched me so deeply. And you know, you were touched deeply by those women. And then in writing the book, and me reading it, you touched me, and I'm sure that you'll touch others as well, which is so beautiful. It's the thing that you were talking about when you give, you know, that you do receive. And it's almost like you're spreading the wisdom, you know, by doing this interview and, you know, by writing the book. You're spreading the wisdom that you've been given. And so that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I think I believe that all of us have a responsibility to share our stories. That's how we grow and we learn, and it gives other people the permission to be a little freer and to know that they are not alone on their journey. And that is so important to know that you're not. It's not just you alone, and you're not crazy, or you're not making, you know, you're not making stupid mistakes. It's just sometimes you just don't know. You don't know, and you don't know, you don't have the tools, and or you're ashamed. Different things. So I think I know now I have a responsibility to demonstrate by the way I live. And what I share, that we all on this journey together.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Now, on your journey to Uganda, what was your greatest challenge? What was the greatest gift?
Oh, that's a nice question. My greatest challenge was myself, getting out of my own way. And secondly, the electricity power cuts that happened every other day.
Right. And the trickling water, right?
I didn't mind the water so much because I could let a bucket fill up. But, oh my God, I remember when I was coming back. I was actually going to Houston for a little bit, and I had to pack. And there was no electricity for 2 days. I was like, okay, I should be used to this by now. But that really got to me, that the electricity thing, oh my God. And the other thing was getting out of my own way, in the sense that being willing and open to all the experiences and not judging it. I think now I'm a calmer person. It took a while, but I don't get flustered with traffic again, something like that. Because sometimes you're in a traffic jam, or what they call it, jam. You're in a jam there for like hours, and it's like a 15-minute journey.
Right.
And what can you do? You just switch off your car, you come out, and you talk to somebody. So that, yeah, electricity and my own, getting out of my own way was my greatest challenge. What was the other one? Greatest lesson?
Well, what was your greatest challenge and what was the greatest gift?
Gift. The greatest gift was just being there and getting the courage to share my story, finding the courage to share my story. A lot of people who knew me from before would have never guessed that I would be talking to audiences. I mean, anywhere, because I don't talk much.
You fooled me.
Oh my God! Yeah, I mean, when going for years, they're like, "Oh my God, you." I've never heard you say more than 10 words.
Oh, that's hysterical, because you and I have just been chatting away. Now that's funny.
But the greatest gift was finding the courage to share my story and to just be me, to be unapologetically Akosua.
Right. So Akosua. Yeah, I think I butchered your name. I'm sorry about that. But I love the way you say your name, Akosua. It's like a song there.
Thank you.
But it's beautiful, yeah. So tell us about the Enabling Enterprise project that you founded. And you also have a TED Talk coming up. Yay. That you're going to be doing.
Yes. So Enabling Enterprise Project is really my attempt at using entrepreneurship as an empowerment vehicle for women and young women. By going into the different countries or different organizations, and training, facilitating, working with women who want to rebuild their communities. And we use entrepreneurship as that vehicle, the tools. Not everybody may open a business, but the tools on risk-taking and being comfortable in your own skin and persistence, etc. Those things. The best parts about the Enabling Enterprise Project is we have a program called NENA, which is for young women age 16. And we do the same thing in schools, where we spend 12 weeks with them, and we introduce them every week to a woman who would share her story on entrepreneurship or bouncing back from challenges. And at the end, they do a pitch, a business pitch, and they get some money some seed funding. So, yeah, it's been a labor of love, but to give is to receive. Yeah. So I continue.
Beautiful. And tell us about the TED Talk. And the beauty of the TED Talks is they live indefinitely, just like this interview. So whenever people listen to this, they can listen to this and then go listen to your TED Talk. So what's the title of your talk?
Well, the theme of the TEDx is Reality Revisited. So my talk would be called The Journey to Enoughness. And I'm really just going to share my story. I'm so excited and a little bit nervous, and I'm proud to be asked to share my story on a TEDx stage. So it's going to be on Thursday, the 6th of October, which is this Thursday. And it's going to be at Queen's Hall, which is one of maybe one of the best places in Port of Spain, which is the capital. And we have some phenomenal speakers on Thursday. So I'm really, really, really proud and excited and happy to be a part of the whole TEDx movement and those speakers who will be given the talks of their lives on Thursday, including me.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah, so it's going to be from 12 noon Eastern time. And we have a whole day planned, and we have a after party as well, because we love to party in the Caribbean.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we love it. So we have to have a party.
Right. Yeah, that's great. So, do you have anything to share that we haven't covered and any closing reflections?
I just wanted to thank you so much for inviting me back on the program. It's the first time was really, you made me feel so comfortable to share my story. And this time was no different. I want you to continue doing all your good work and exposing so much of the young authors and artists and creatives. So I bless you for that and thank you. And to everyone out there, I hope that on your journey you show up as yourself every single time.
Yeah, you know what? I was looking at page 160 of your book, and I was wondering if you mind reading that. It's the fourth pa from the fourth paragraph on to the closing on the next page. I just love the way you ended it. It starts with "I'm overflowing." If you don't mind reading it, or if you want me to read it, I can read it. But it's just such a powerful closing.
I would love to hear you read it.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yeah, to hear it in your voice.
Okay. But it's just, I just thought, what a powerful closing to an incredible journey. And I loved it. So I thought it would be great to read it.
Sure.
It says, "I am overflowing with gratitude for the time I spent here. I am grateful for the lessons, for this tremendous gift of a life that I received. To be part of the full stop, to be part of the then what? For the ancestors, the freedom fighters, the women who have built this place and showed me that there is always a choice to choose love, starting with self, I am grateful. That it serves no purpose to blindly obsess over the world's superficial trinkets, to waste my time worrying about what I cannot do and what I do not have. I have life and I have choice. Today, I am grateful for all the women who speak their truth to freedom, change, healing, and love, peace. Why am I here? I am here to fulfill a duty of being a demonstration of what is possible when authenticity is combined with your purpose. That is true personal power. Why am I here? I am here to love and accept myself unconditionally. Why am I here? I am here to create, and creation comes from a place of love. Why am I here? I am here to serve. May I serve with much fire, much heart, much desire, much thanks, and much prayer. Peace." I love that.
Wow.
Yes.
It's the first time I heard it read out loud, and I you did it so much justice. Oh my God. I feel so emotional hearing it.
Yeah, it was just, I was so moved. What a perfect way to close the book. It's like the closing of one journey, and then, of course, the beginning of something else. The TED Talks, the conversation that we're having today, it just goes on. And you're such a beautiful soul,
Thank
and
you.
with such a beautiful story.
Thank you so much, Andrea.
So it's always a pleasure connecting with you.
Yes,
And I know
always.
you'll be back because you're always doing things, right? Well,
I just saw a wonderful book tour in New York. That was really good.
Oh,
It was really
good.
good. Well, I'll keep you informed.
Yeah, keep me posted. You know, just get in touch with me again. You know, I'm always happy to have you back. And
thank you.
Let's see, Niyabu, Madam, why are you here? The truth about living in service, love, and personal power. That's great. Just wonderful.
Thank you, Andrea.
Well, thank you. And take care.
Take good care as well.
Okay, and people should visit you on...
My website is akoswadardane.com. And I'm on Instagram as Akoswa D. Edwards and on Facebook as well.
Okay. AkoswaDardane.com.
Dardane Edwards.
Oh, okay. Great. Okay. Yeah, that's what I... Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. So you have just the one site, correct?
Yes. That's one
AkoswaDardaneEdwards.com.
Yes.
Right. Great. Well, thank you so much and take care.
Take care, Andrea.
All right. Good night. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. I would like to thank our guest, author Akoswa Dardane Edwards, for being here to discuss the book, Niyabu. Madam, why are you here? For more information, visit www.akoswadardaneedwards.com. I would like to encourage all of our listeners to practice the universal law of giving by doing whatever you can to reach out to help others. To each and every one of you out there, thank you so much for joining me, Andrea Garrison, and connecting here online with Andrea. Listen to me live or listen to the archive. Just continue connecting heart to heart. But in the meantime, do whatever you can to reach out to help others. And never underestimate the power of a friendly smile. Take care.
Thank you for connecting to Online with Andrea with your host, Andrea Garrison.